And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, June 29th, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 21. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
I'm Matt.
I'm Dennis.
And I'm RJ.
Goodness, we got a lot of people in the room today. In fact, we've got a lot of people in the room, and everybody has played and finished Last of Us, so expect that to come up. Meanwhile, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228, 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as over on Facebook. You can email us, everyone, at InGameChat.net. We're streaming the cam feed right now through Ustream, and you can find us there, or you can hit up our Facebook page and watch from there as well. Has joined the chat room live while we broadcast. Got people in the chat room already waiting for the show, so hello everybody in the chat room, and hello everybody listening live. We do appreciate it. Hasn't happened in a while, but we come to a week where there really wasn't one single dominating story in the news. It's usually, oh gosh, for the past couple of months, it's switched from being EA for quite a few months to Microsoft for the past couple of weeks, but this week, not so much. It happens, we're just not used to having it happen in that amount of time. So probably going to be jumping around here and there with some news articles and just what we played. We've got emails lined up. We've got Last of Us spoiler talk to go into. We will give you a good heads up on that before we dive into it.
We tried to hold off on the spoilers last week, but
we did a pretty good job last week of talking about a game that's full of spoilers that it's hard to talk about without actually going into spoilers. We did a very good job, I think, last week of not doing that. Being able to praise the game without ruining the story for you. So anyway, all of that coming up. And this is the part that's very difficult because normally I try to find somewhere to go from here. It's usually this one story that sticks out, but
you reach into the bag of stupid things that EA or Microsoft have done in the past 7 days. And
well, to bring up something that we've already brought up, one of those stupid things being is that they're not including a headset with their console, which is a stupid thing.
I don't understand how there was any traction on that story this week at all, because we thought that was pretty clear back on the 21st when you and I were preparing for the show that immediately followed
the reveal.
The reveal of Microsoft's console. We were watching what we thought to be one of the most interesting things that had happened that day, which was the Game Informer video interview, wasn't it, with Mark Whitten?
Yes, it was. Game Informer with Mark Whitten, yes.
And they specifically posed the question of headsets. And his answer was something very much like, boy, yeah, we love headsets. Next question. And yeah. It's like, hey, but do you love headsets in the box? And he pretty much said, yeah, well, you know, we think headsets are great. That's about it. Look, if you're going to put it in the box, if it was going in the box, you would say it's going in the box. You don't leave that as a question.
Sony did.
You leave it unsaid, yeah. And you rush past it and you get on to another topic if it's something you don't want to say. This is something that has been the hallmark of how Microsoft has handled everything for the last 5 weeks.
Yeah.
The whole point, the whole reason why it matters is, in this case, twofold. One, we saw clear evidence with the PS3 that if you don't include a headset in every box and make sure that every single player has access to some level of communication with every other player, then you've done something really, really, you've dampened the theoretical energy and activity of the social interaction that you want on your network. And so people just wind up not talking. If it's their responsibility to get a headset on their own, just to have the most basic level of interaction with other people, then they're not going to have the most basic level of interaction with other people.
Did you get a headset for your PS3?
I already had a USB headset, a corded USB headset, with a cable long enough to get to the machine, so it was fine. But the point is, it's kind of like it's a bit like herd immunity with vaccinations, right? If you don't have a certain number of people involved in it, then you have massive problems. You have to have most people with a headset for it to matter. Otherwise,
yeah, there's only one guy with a headset.
It doesn't matter.
What does it do? What strategy?
It absolutely doesn't matter. Microsoft has said, I don't know if this is to the credit of the design team or the marketing team, I don't know. They have said that, well, the Kinect, man, the Kinect is holler at me, got my ears on. like, everybody's going to be able to just, like, scream at their TV and everybody can hear everything because technology and Kinect, and I'm sure the cloud was inserted in there at some point. I don't know. But they've claimed that it just doesn't matter that we're not putting a headset in there. It would have been better to hear, it doesn't matter because Kinect, but also because our system is fully backward compatible with all of the peripherals that you've already used.
Yeah.
It is fully not backward compatible.
It is not. I mean, I know obviously the controller looks almost identical, but no, you're still looking at a proprietary input on that controller that does not match up with what you used with your 360. So instead of that, they have revealed that they will sell an adapter, which is still something that you need to buy extra,
right,
and go out and seek and actually get it rather than including it in the box, that sort of situation. It's amazing how the role reversal on so many different levels,
yes,
from Sony to Microsoft has changed. Sony learning things and Microsoft saying, well, we don't need to include a headset because it comes with Kinect. But did you not see what happened with what Sony did when they didn't include a headset?
There is still a huge question about how functional Kinect 2.0 is.
Right.
Kinect 2.0 at this moment is, and this is not in an effort to simply dance all over Microsoft because they're having a bad time. I'm not looking to kick them when they're down or trying to get back up. I just don't. I don't believe in that. I really, really liked Microsoft's approach, the 360's approach,
mm-hmm, yeah,
to having a headset, and particularly the original headsets.
Oh, the one that had the hook mute into the, yeah, right there on the
right. It had the mute button and the volume control right on the plug base
at the base,
right where, yeah, your thumb was. So I could just snap to mute anytime I wanted to. Am I being hollered at by somebody in the room? I can mute my headset instantaneously, unmute it, go back to talking to people. It was really, really, really good. It seems like such a simple thing, but simple things are very important. Now I have to expect that the magic Kinect is going to understand what I mean to say and who I mean to say it to at any point in time for it to solve the issue of there not being just a, you know, a flimsy, chintzy, janky, basic headset in the box to ensure that anyone I connect to is going to have the option to hear me and respond.
Yeah, so, what about room noise and such? Is that going to be...
They have claimed... that the Kinect is, that the software and the hardware are advanced enough and are, right? Like, I know, I made that same face.
Yeah.
To absolutely distinguish between who is speaking to the system and both the ambient noise of the room and any noise being generated by the sound system and the games that it's playing.
So it's going to be like a great noise filter plus directional microphone.
Yes.
And
yes,
solve all our problems that we have with
this,
having these,
this is mostly,
things on our heads.
Right. This is mostly what they've said.
Just hope you don't have jerk roommates that just start yelling, you know.
Well, but I mean, again, they have claimed, and I don't know because I haven't proven that it doesn't work, but this is what they've said. So really, fine. We've gotten to the point where they're admitting they're not putting a headset in the box. This means that you're never really going to be sure if the person on the other end of any multiplayer conversation is there to, you know, play their part, I suppose, whatever that is. I think it's worth asking whether that really matters, to what degree it really matters. I only talk to the people that I know. I only talk to people I trust. I don't talk to, like, just random people. I got over that a really long time ago because random people are pretty terrible people in most cases.
I think most of us here don't go into open chat when we, you know, when we did play multiplayer games on the Xbox.
No, you wind up in party chat talking to your friends, or you wind up on a team with people that, mm-hmm, are handpicked or that you're invited to or something like that. And that's still probably going to be the preferred method. Whatever else the Xbox One is able to do, if it is able to do even everything that is advertised, it will not fix the 12-year-olds on the other end of my headset.
No.
It can't do that. Well, I guess it could, technically, if they were a little more strict about their policies and their account management, but that's neither here nor there, really. I don't necessarily want to talk to them, so... I don't know, it's not the end of the world, but... It had an effect on Sony.
Yeah.
We used it to beat Sony with for several years.
But, you know, we did that because, you know, it warranted it. You know, and this warrants, you know, the same kind of response. that, you know, it's these little things, you know, that you keep on adding them up, that you just look at the two systems and you're like Scott said, they just swap places, you know. One hasn't learned while the other one's been taking notes.
Yeah, people in the chat room saying, well, I hooked up Bluetooth to my PS3 and that sort of thing. I didn't have a Bluetooth at the time I had a PS3. My PS3 also sits 6 feet across the room.
That's not 6 feet.
What is that? Like, that's 10 feet.
That's like 14 feet.
Yeah, it's a long
way
across. Your TV
is the size of the wall it sits against, and you therefore sit as close to the other wall as you can get in a very long room.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. I didn't have a Bluetooth device at the time I had my PS3. The one of the other faults with the PS3 and their headset thing was that Microsoft let you plug your headset into the controller, which is right there with you. If I could have plugged a headset into my controller, it would have, not brought about the need to go somewhere and pick up either an USB extension, which didn't work very well because it needed to be powered, or a really long headset cord to plug into my PS3 base unit sitting at the TV where the TV is. So it ultimately became a non-issue because I didn't play multiplayer on my PS3 anyway. But it ultimately became something where I just wasn't going to fool with chatting with people.
You can't really say it was a non-issue when you consider the fact that it may have been one of the issues that caused you not to play multiplayer on your PS3.
Exactly.
Yeah, it definitely did for me. I have no interest. I considered looking at Last of Us multiplayer, but it's like I'll never be able to form a good team because
right.
I won't be able to talk to anybody unless I go get an extension cord or something.
RJ,
yeah,
play a significant amount of multiplayer on your PS3.
Mm-hmm. Fighting games mostly. But
what do you use for communication?
I use a Turtle Beach headset.
Okay.
I picked one of those up because eventually got to the point where I was in a Virtual Fighter 5 league a while back, and to speed up interaction between the players, you know, it was best if we had a headset, so I went out and picked one up for that purpose. But before that, I went a while just without using a headset at all, or just not talking to anybody. I mean, the best conversation I had was with through email right then and there. Just hit the home button, send an email message, and that was it.
But if something would have been included, then from the get-go, that wouldn't have been an issue, because you would have started, you know, you'd have that option.
I'd use it if I needed it, but I mean, if it was free, why not? I'll just use it if I need it.
You're real good online, buddy. You're real good for online communities. Because you just sat here and told me that you got a headset to facilitate a better playing environment for everybody.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You have to understand, nobody does that.
I know. He has a look on his face. You can't see him on the webcam.
Yeah, right,
he's all the way over there.
Right, he's given me that same look, like where he just can't believe I'm as stupid as I'm making myself sound, that I get from him all the time. But I'm telling you, no, most people don't do this. Right? We are almost universally the most selfish and self-centered groups of people, right? I got a headset because those people need to do what I say. That's why we keep losing, is because they won't do what I say. Something along those lines. And you have to believe me, RJ just doesn't sit here and make a statement like that just to sound good. That's legitimate. Like, his concern is about the quality of the environment he's playing in, and he's being a good steward of that environment. So I just thought I thought I would point that out.
Oh, I appreciate that.
It's good of you. Just in general, to put that part of yourself into the world. You're like the only guy who does that, though. You and probably whichever guys you play with.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, I mean, I've seen examples of bad behavior online. I mean, I've gotten hate mail before about something in-game. But usually I just read it, look at it, delete it, and keep going about my business.
Yeah.
If you've played anything online, you've seen bad examples of behavior online.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're not good at what you do online unless you have gotten hate mail for it.
Well, what's that saying? If everybody likes what you're doing something
very wrong. Or if they can't see you. Really, like, you know that you've become decent at a game once you've been accused of hacking.
Yeah.
I was always very proud, because I don't ever do that under any circumstances. And until I've been accused of hacking in a game, I don't feel like I've developed the necessary skill at whatever it is.
Now, we haven't had RJ and Dennis in here in a while. We haven't had RJ in here since Microsoft reversed their policies, which we got a good opinion of him we got a good opinion on your thoughts on the Xbox One right after we got back from E3. And your stance on a lot of those policies was that it's just not my thing. I don't like those kind of policies, and I'm not gonna jump into it. As well as the price being $100 more expensive than the PS4. Has your opinion at all changed any now that they've reversed?
My initial thought is that it's a nice start, but you got a little ways to go. I mean, you still have to have that Kinect on all the time, do you not?
From something like that.
I mean,
they've been just as vague on that as
they really have. It's got to be plugged in all the time, but you can pause the Kinect services or activities or something. I can't remember precisely how they worded it, but they seem to be saying two completely contradictory things about the Kinect. I personally can't imagine that the system we've been shown is a system that can operate without the Kinect plugged in. Jeremy, as a point, we were talking about what we imagined would happen if you had a Kinect and or sorry, an Xbox One and unplugged the Kinect from it. And he said he thought it would be the same as what happened with their previous systems. He was talking to me specifically about the very first Xbox and how if you didn't have it hooked up to the AV inputs and you tried to boot it, it would suspend the boot operation. It wouldn't actually complete the boot operation until it was plugged in. Just talking about the device's ability to detect I/O.
I didn't even
of any sort.
Not that I ever tried that. I know that that was during his time over at the shop when he would work on these systems. So right. I can understand him running into that situation or having a customer bring it in. It doesn't work anymore. Oh, it's just because you didn't have it plugged in. I can see that, right. But
I'm not sure what the circumstances were, but it was just something pointing out that the device is completely capable. And this leads me to another question, but the device is totally capable of understanding what is and is not plugged into it. So I can't imagine that if the Kinect is not physically plugged in, that the system will operate properly. They may let you suspend certain things. They may say, and this is what I suspect. I suspect that you can tell the system, stop paying attention to what I say. Right? I don't think you can tell it to stop listening. But I think you can tell it to stop acting on voice input or something like that.
Because eventually, it'll have to get back on. So I think it'll have to keep on listening.
Well, no, I think you can probably use the controller and direct input to turn that on or off, just like you can any other service. In the UI. But I also don't think that simply throwing a towel over it or blinding it. I mean, these are honest suggestions.
No, I know.
As if it's that simple. I fully expect the thing to be like, hey, there's a towel on me. Like, take that off or whatever. Like, I can't see, you know. And it'll stop the operation of a game or whatever you're doing, just like it does when your controller's batteries die.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's fully capable of stopping whatever you think it's supposed to be doing when it doesn't have the input it expects.
Because it's way more integrated than the first Kinect ever was. So I could totally...
The first Kinect wasn't really integrated.
Yeah, but I mean, I could totally see where you're coming with that. I could really see it stopping all your operations.
Is that chief among your concerns? Can you tell us what you... I mean, again, as someone who just doesn't really feel like they need the system anyway, if you could look at everything that you don't like about it and name the top thing...
The limitations on what you could do with used games and borrowing, basically.
Which are gone now.
It's gone now.
All right, so that being gone, what is the...
Now it's $100 more than the competition.
Okay.
I mean, like I said, it's a start, what they're doing, but they still got a little ways to go. And I don't know, I just had a sneaky suspicion that Microsoft felt was all that DRM stuff with the used games and whatnot. It's just like, it's too much. Maybe the consumer base thought it was too much to handle at one time. Maybe we'll just hold off and bring it back slightly, a little bit at a time, just gradually bring
that,
it in.
See, I do think that's funny, right? And Sony could do the same thing.
Yeah, they could.
And nobody is expecting, nobody says, tricky Sony, they just wanted to look good at E3, right? They just want to be a good company and everything. I don't trust them for a second. They're going to start sneaking this business back into the system after launch. After everybody falls in love with them, you know, then they gotcha, right? Like, well, nobody seems to think that.
Well, you also have to consider, you know, Microsoft is removing this by a patch, a day one patch.
So it's still there.
Yeah, so it's, in theory, they could just add it back in a year or two later.
Well, but that's I'm saying. They both yeah. could. It's the consumer suspicion that I think is a little bit. Man, I'm not a fan of what Microsoft is doing right now at all. I don't want to sound like a fan, but the thing. Yes, it's all very good. I was very happy with what Sony had to say. I want Microsoft to suffer a little. Not because I hate them. Not because I'm a fanboy of any particular kind. I am a fanboy of excellent games. Okay? I don't care where they are. I own both systems now. I'm going to own both systems, you know, eventually. Within the next 2 years, probably. So believe me when I say the reason I want them to suffer, the reason that they should suffer publicly, that they should suffer in their wallet, they should suffer a problem with income, they should probably suffer in manufacturing, they should suffer internally. The reason is because that very clearly helps you learn lessons. Sony suffered in all of those ways over the last several years, and all the evidence points to that arduous, kind of painful growth process leading us to a place where we are now, and the PS4 looks from every angle like a really wonderful answer to a next-gen console. If Microsoft skates by, right? If they reverse a couple of decisions and they kind of convince people that this other thing is okay, and then we all just agree that everything is forgiven because DRM was somehow the only thing wrong with the system, then no learning has occurred. And I want learning to occur because I want them to do better in the future what Sony has done recently, if that makes any sense. I mean, it may be me hoping too much, but it's not so much about punishment. It just seems to be the only thing capable of teaching a lesson to a very large corporation. When they do something and it is very poorly received and it costs them money. That's all. It's not even... And I think most... I don't know most people, but I am suspicious that a lot of people want to see Microsoft suffer because they are fanboys, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we got to take our first break of the show, and we will be right back with more in-game chat. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. Music from Katamari. As it said right there in the title, I guess maybe I didn't even need to say it, but I did anyway. There you go.
I would have guessed Mega Man.
I was wondering if I was at the right show.
Anyway, welcome back to the show. A couple of people in the chat room apparently pay close attention to James and I when we're on Steam and watch what games we play.
Right.
Because they were like, hey... There could be some Witcher talk in this episode, and you're right. There very well could be some Witcher talk in this episode.
What happened was...
Really? What happened was?
What had occurred...
Yes.
...is that they announced a third Witcher. And so you think, when looking at this third Witcher, this you know, not exactly imminent game, but, like, it's fantastic. Finally, this thing that began as an absolutely... I mean, just PC all the way down to its bones and organs type of RPG, and had a bit of a showing on, it was just on the 360, right? Witcher 2?
Yeah, Witcher 2.
Got a port to only the 360. Still reportedly a fantastic game, but 3, right? 3, this is everything we were talking about before, which we were absolutely right about. We're not the only people who said it, but we were absolutely right. This whole notion of, like, what 8 gigs of RAM is going to do for us. It's going to allow... It is going to remove... Man, it's going to get rid of something that has been plaguing gaming for an awful long time. And it isn't because console scrubs are horrible people or anything like that. These little things cannot make the kind of worlds that the PCs could because they didn't have the basic resources at hand. So now what do you get? And this may not be the best thing in the world. You get an E3 that is absolutely lousy with the announcement of open world games. Every open world game that has ever existed is going to continue to exist. Any game that has apparently existed in any form in the past is now an open world game.
Metal Gear Solid, of all things.
I mean, seriously, right? And some things this will work well for, some things it won't. I'm going to put Metal Gear in the won't category. I'm going to put Witcher 3 in the will.
It's kind of like the 3D revolution when, you know, everything was like side-scrolling, and then, you know, with Mario 64, everything went 3D, and then...
Right. And for like some things it worked really well, some things it didn't.
Just
but
with the limitations of technology at the time.
Right.
Now that we don't have those stepping stones.
Everything can be everywhere, and nothing necessarily has to suffer. So anyway, whatever about that. So they announced Witcher 3, right? Scott sees Witcher 3. Scott loves Witcher 3. Who doesn't?
It looked good.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It was
So then what happens in your head? In your head you're like, oh, that's good. I should play Witcher 2. So I can be ready for Witcher 3. But in order to play Witcher 2, I should probably play Witcher 1.
I am one of those people who I can't just
start and this halfway.
This is the problem that we have.
Yeah.
We in this studio are the worst people in the world. We have not. We have a variety of...
It's worse than the worst, though, I think, because we've owned the thing for years and just haven't done it.
Yeah. This is exactly true.
It's not the sense that we haven't played it, so we should get on the ball and do that. It's the sense that we've owned it for years. By the way, still have Bastion, haven't done a thing with it. Mm-hmm. We've owned it for years, and
right.
It's been suggested, you know, hey, you should really play this, you should really do this. We went through 1, and we went through 2. We saw the announcement for 3, and it still didn't click. It wasn't until E3...
It's different for the two of us. I know that because I know you. You are not an RPG guy.
I'm not.
Like at all. And
I'm not a fantasy guy at all.
At all.
Not, yeah,
so it's like two things that are not your thing. So it's the excitement about Witcher 3, how good it looks, and wanting to be able to play it at the same time as everyone else. That's a big thing for us on this show. Other people have no problem waiting months and months and months and years to play other stuff. We don't. We really like playing everything as soon as we possibly can. But I know you, and that's why you want to do it. For me, it's mounting guilt. It's really, really terrible mounting guilt. It was bad enough when the game was just a few years old and I hadn't played it. And then 2 comes out, and...
I remember when Witcher 2 came out, I was like, I really need to play
it. I really gotta, because no one will shut up about 2. And then now what am I going to do? Right? I mean, how much finger-wagging am I going to have to suffer a year from now when Witcher 3 is out and I still haven't played 1 or 2? So, what do? I go back and I start it again. I have started The Witcher. This, I think, is my 6th time trying to play The Witcher.
6th attempt, yeah.
It is.
Have you gotten further
the lore,
than your 5?
Oh, absolutely. No. The previous 5 tries, I never got out of the little castle thing that you start in. I would play a little bit, and it's weird, you know, because it is weird. It's very different. It's got a unique approach to combat and to combat readiness and to its notion of, I guess, magics and spells and all of those things. It's very odd, and you gotta meet it halfway. You gotta be willing to do some work to understand it. And so I would quit kind of somewhere in that tutorial and think, like, this is maybe a little too obtuse for me. Go back to it later and be like, yeah, I completely forgot everything I learned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not playing this game. And then 6 months later, I would feel guilty and I would come back to the game and try it again. And it wouldn't work. And I would repeat the process. And there you have it, right? And it's a game that you absolutely will get chided for not having played if you're the kind of person that runs their mouth as much as we do about games. If you're just like a normal person, it's fine. You don't have to play it.
Doing a show for 7 years that talks about games, then it's like, yeah. And then you go into something and say, well, I haven't played, especially for me doing these write-ups after E3, saying, let me start off by telling you, and I really do have to start off by telling you, I have not played Witcher 1 or Witcher 2.
Philistine.
Exactly. And I almost feel disingenuous going into these meetings with them, having not played these games. But I know people want to hear about it. I'm the wrong guy to send, but there's nobody else to go. I mean, there's other outlets and stuff, but you know, there's nobody else to go from us to go and see these things. And so I sit in there and Let me tell you, what I saw in Witcher 3 now makes a whole lot more sense. Now that I played 1, I know...
Even a little bit.
Oh, my goodness. Now I know, it was like, well, he's got 3 bars up there. There's a blood one, and there's a red one, so I know that's his health. I don't know what those other two are.
Right.
Now I know. You know, now I know what these things are. Now I know what these things do. They showed the...
You know what the bars mean.
Yeah, they showed
I'm pretty sure the bars at the top are the least important thing to know about Witcher.
Someone asked... After I posted, someone asked, do you still have to worry about all these things? And I said, I don't know, but there's 3 bars up there that may have something to do with it. But we weren't informed. I know the skill tree layout looks now, you know, all this stuff makes just a lot more sense to me after playing just, I don't know, I think 3-4 hours worth of Witcher.
Well, and we've both finally done the thing or at least I had trouble with, is getting past what passes for a tutorial and introductory segment in that game, which I just don't think is very good. It's almost impenetrable. And if you're in the wrong mood, it's such a distinct flavor, The Witcher. Western, for the most part, Eastern European in this case, but Western-style CRPGs are, on a good day, pretty strong, right? They're a really bold flavor of a very particular kind. And within that, Witcher itself is, you know... even more so, I guess. So if you're not in the right mood, if you're not in the right frame of mind, if you're not sort of willing, then it can be a tough time. The game isn't what you want it to be. The game is what it is. And so you have to come to it, I suppose, with a bit of an open mind, if you're not already a fan of the world. And it's a very kind of dense lore. You have to relearn everything that you expect from a fantasy thing. But it sounds ridiculous. But I was extraordinarily happy that once I got past whatever it was, right, once I crossed over whatever difficult hump it was that I had with that game, all of a sudden I was into it.
Yeah.
And that, like, that matters a little bit.
I tried it, and I'm still at the, I just beat the tutorial. I was at the castle, and when the people came and raided, and I pushed it back. And that's where I was like, the combat was awkward. I'm not used to it. I'm used to a different kind of combat when it comes to RPGs and just games in general. And so I think other stuff came out, and so I'll put it down. But
so you haven't even left the castle then?
Not yet. But I'm thinking
you're still in the prologue then.
I'm thinking about just starting it over again. Well,
might as well. Yeah. I mean, that's nothing. But yeah, I mean, I think you're still in the prologue, which, again, even after that battle at the castle was done, it wasn't until they put me in the town. It wasn't until you get to the inn. And then get out of that area and kind of explore the area that's around that section, that really it started to work for me. It really started to work. I don't know what it was, but I mean, obviously it wasn't the looks of it or anything like that. But
it's not the looks.
I really enjoyed the personality this game has.
This game has a lot of personality, and I'm sure once upon a time it looked acceptable. It doesn't now, but that's okay. That's perfectly
fine.
It
is. It's fine, and I'm getting through it. And again, only a little bit of the ways into it, but
we're going to be trying. We are as a group, at least several of us, trying to make an effort to. I don't know exactly what this is. You know, at the outset of the segment, we were saying that it's your desire to be up to speed on Witcher 3 when it comes out, and mine as well, but also a lot of guilt for not having played it. The continual... it always shows up in any recommendation. You know, if you say, hey, here's my backlog, what should I play? You know, out of my backlog, I know. If I gave somebody my backlog right now, anyone I gave it to would give me the same answers. Why haven't you played The Witcher? Why haven't you played Bastion? Why haven't you played Dark Souls?
I see you finished Mark of the Ninja. Good job.
I did not finish it.
Oh, I thought you did.
No, I didn't.
I'm sorry. Playing it.
I'm sorry. It's really good, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Like, really?
It's really good.
Who does it think it is, being that good?
I know.
But it's good.
Really good.
Great. One more game I have to get now.
Well, it's really good, so don't worry about it.
And you should have a sale coming up pretty soon where you can get it pretty cheap.
I'm sure.
But here's something that I suspect, and I want to know if this is true for anybody else. It could just be me. Because I do things wrong. Even where my PC is concerned, even though the fact that my PS3 and my Xbox 360 are themselves not going anywhere, even though I'm not getting the Xbox One, and there won't really be very much for me to play on my PS4 when it comes out, I feel an overwhelming need right now in this sort of pause while the entire industry is holding its breath, waiting for these new consoles. I feel like for gaming in general, because it's the summer, right? And the summer is always the doldrums where game releases are concerned. It's always the rainy day you've saved your backlog for. Mm-hmm. But we also have this great big pause because we're at the end of a console generation. So software creativity is generally, it is kind of at a low over the course of several years. And then it's the summer within that low. So there's just not a lot going on. And there's like a general feeling that now is the time.
It's a unique.
Now is the time to play whatever it is that you've had sitting on the back burner for a really long time. And I have this, I'm doing like really retarded things now. I'm doing like really stupid things to add to a backlog that already exists. I'm going out of my way looking at weird used games. For some reason, I have like a strong urge to play JRPGs now. I don't know where that came from. I haven't played one of those in years.
I was saying the last one was probably Lost Odyssey, I'm willing to bet.
Which I didn't finish.
Ah, you need
Yeah, you see? Thanks a lot, man.
You're welcome.
Like I needed
that. You need
that
to play through that.
I find myself going through and looking at things that are on the PS3 or the 360 because I think I don't want to touch these anymore. For whatever reason, for whatever wrong-headed reason, I don't want to touch them anymore once the new system comes out. And on my PC, I'm looking at things that are very distinctly from this past generation. Mm-hmm. Even though the PC is more of a continuum, you know, it's sort of, it's marked time with the consoles, like it or not. So there's just a whole world of stuff out there that I find myself in a desperate rush to finish before this fall. And I don't know why. It isn't just your typical clear the backlog kind of thing. I'm like,
feels more frantic.
It is more frantic, and I'm doing ridiculous things. Like, I was trying to figure out a way to hook up my old GameCube so I could play Wind Waker the other day. Like, I'm doing this level of stuff because I never beat Wind Waker.
I have an emulator, a Nintendo GameCube emulator.
My GameCube, and yeah, I've still got Wind Waker. There was no way I was trading that game in with not having finished it, being right on the precipice.
You really
of
are
finishing.
Right at the end.
I'm really right at the end of that, and never finished it.
I feel so bad for you guys.
I know.
Am I the only one who finished?
I did.
Okay.
I got really close. And I don't remember why we gave up. I didn't really give up. It was the fact that the way this worked was James and Dana and Jeremy actually started to as well. They would come over to the house and we would play Mario Kart for a while. And when we got tired of playing Mario Kart, I'd just play Zelda for a bit. And they'd watch me play Zelda. And it got to a point where I couldn't play Zelda unless they came over. So that they could all follow along. It's one of those things. And so we got to that point, and then it just kind of stopped happening. I think we may have started doing the show. And
I don't remember what it was. I honestly don't remember. That's a whole lifetime ago.
It really was, but I've still got it, and I didn't turn it in.
But you made it as far. Made it as far as saving just prior to the final fight. The final fight.
Yeah.
And this has been 7 years.
Oh,
yes, he shakes his head.
It's almost a shame to beat it now. If I'm honest with you,
I know
what a thing to cherish that you've been sitting outside of that door. And I don't know. It would bother me more. I've told you I can remember where I am in every game that I've quit,
mm-hmm.
And it's hard on me, man. It's like really hard on me. It's a weight, and I can't really deal with it. But I do find myself in a very strange place. Psychologically now, just wanting to play things that I've ever had any interest in and beating them. I have a stronger desire now to play Dark Souls than anything else. The only reason I haven't is because I have a stronger desire to avoid half playing Dark Souls, if that makes any sense. I don't want to get into it and it makes me cry. And then I stop playing it, and then I am forever in a certain place in my mind in the middle of that game, having not finished it. It's a big deal to me. You can look at me all you want, like with your weird faces and everything, but it's a big deal to me. I get really messed up if I don't finish video games that I care about.
I never finished Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, come on. How are you even in this room?
The memory card. I thought you guys knew that. The memory card that I was at the Sephiroth battle at the end, and the memory card that I had was one of those old PS1 multi-card whatever.
Those were untrustworthy. Yeah. Those were a gamble.
Yes, they were. But was it
like
that,
one of the 32-megabyte ones instead of the official 8-megabyte?
Yes. And so I had that. I had Lunar. I had a couple other like RPGs right at the end, and the thing failed. And trying to bring myself back to going through everything to get to there.
First of all, what were you doing trying to play multiple RPGs at once, especially back in that era?
Have you not met me? I do that.
And you wonder why you never finish them.
He finishes things. It's just the same old game over and over and over.
If it's not Grim Fandango, you can't finish it.
I never finished Grim Fandango. Don't bring that up.
I think I finished it enough for all of us.
Are we comparing backlogs now?
I mean, we really are. This is the mother of all summer backlogs.
It really is. Yeah. You've got consoles that are coming out maybe October, November. You've got games on those consoles that are going to be releasing on your current gen systems, but also going to be releasing on your next gen systems as well. With the exception, I can't think of anything for the 360, but I can easily think of two games for the PS3 that a lot of people are looking for, GT6 and Beyond Two Souls, that are not coming to your next gen systems, not coming to your PS4.
Those
are your two games that could get in the way of any kind of backlog that you want to complete. But other than that, you've got until about October or November. We still don't. We know November for Xbox One. We do not know.
November is most likely
it's
for both of them.
Very likely for both.
The window is really narrow. I would also like to point out that this is kind of a unique scenario in all time, right? This past console generation really was a wonderful console generation. There were tons of really great things to play. I don't think it had the richness. No single console had the rich library that the PS2 had, mm-hmm. for example, or even the PS1 before it. But they both of them did very, very good. And regardless of which platform you owned, if you were a one console kind of guy, you had tons of stuff to play. It was a great time for third-party cross-platform titles. There was a lot of really wonderful stuff. There was a lot of multiplayer. You weren't always just looking for the next single player game because you could lose yourself for months.
I forgot to mention GTA 5. Lavos mentioned GTA 5. Yeah. I forgot about that.
That's going to be, like, that's another thing. Mm-hmm. But what we have now is we have, look back maybe 3 years, right? To when these current consoles were at their height, when they were generating the had the most throughput of like new games, new good stuff. Everybody was pushing something out all the time. There was just a glut of things to play. And every holiday season and spring were just filled with new things to do. So right about the time, Steam started their shenanigans of feeding me $5 games constantly, right? An IV drip of weekend sales, midweek sales, week-long sales, daily deals.
Hey, it's Tuesday.
Spring, summer, fall, and winter major sales, right? Yeah. Gave me 100 different reasons to choke my catalog with amazing games, both new and old. So going into this particular lull, this particular time when there isn't as much new stuff coming out, we've got, I believe, probably more in our backlog than we've ever had before. I would argue that in a lot of ways, it's the first time it's ever looked like this. It's the first time we've ever had two major consoles coming out at the same time like this. It's the first time we've gone into such a lull with having had so much available for so long. Mm-hmm. It's pretty ridiculous. And there's a lot to do. I mean, you could drive yourself crazy between now and November trying to get everything that's from a theoretical backlog.
Right, which is why I've really stuck with this is the time to finish at least Witcher. And then I can go into Witcher 2. Witcher 3 not due until next year sometime, but I mean, I'd like to have them both done before we hit this new generation in November. I'd like to have them both done, but I'm taking it one step at a time, and right now I just want to finish up Witcher.
Yeah, and it can be a little more difficult. Sometimes it's really easy to, I should have been playing Witcher all day today. Instead, I sat down and that's right, it's the weekend, the Final Fantasy 14 beta is active. I think I'll just log into that real quick and spend 14 hours there.
Yeah, I've been going back and playing more Borderlands. now that the new DLC came out, I'm trying to just, that's one of those games I just pick up and just put down.
Yeah? You know. How is it?
Are you doing that for trading cards?
No, I'm just playing it. I just finished...
I've seen a lot of games pop up on my Steam list of people playing, and I'm like, you're trading cards.
Steam trading cards.
That bug bit you. Yeah, it did.
I just finished the Torg DLC, so I'm making my way through the gameplay to get to the new one that just came out. I'm really curious about it.
But you like the game overall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Borderlands. I like the first one.
I said the same thing, which is why I didn't buy it. It's Borderlands.
See, I enjoy the first one. I mean, it's just, you know, it's that popcorn shooter kind of a thing. You put your brain on check.
It's the kernel that didn't quite pop all the way popcorn. It's like a whole bag of that. I liked the game a little bit, you know, because whatever. You put enough cheesy powder and buttery topping on it and it'll still taste good. But it isn't straight popcorn. It's that undercooked popcorn that falls down to the bottom of the stupid bag. That's what it was. It was really underbaked and really not good. It was okay. Like, it had some goodness in it, you know? Which is why, like, when I saw Borderlands 2, I was like, ah. So, kind of just...
I would say when it goes down for, like, you know, $5. I mean, yeah, they did make some improvements to it.
But is kind of what I'm after, is like, did they kind of make some improvements to it, or no, it's way better than the first one? Don't lie to me, you just told me it was more Borderlands and you liked it. You've already answered the question.
Yeah, no, it was more Borderlands than I liked.
I wish we had a multi-camera setup here. I'd like to switch back and forth between the faces of everyone talking. I would love to have multi-camera setups.
Regardless of how much you like it or anything, if it goes on sale, I'm going to buy it because I'm stupid.
Yeah.
Okay? That's not in question.
A cheap game?
Buy it if it goes on sale. Okay, that's a new behavior for me. I think I'll do that.
Yeah, how's that Duke Nukem going for you?
It's the only thing I won't buy.
It's been free and I've skipped it.
No, obviously I'm going to buy it when it goes on sale. I'm not going to play it. Don't write an email about that. I understand already. The point is, I can't touch it. Look, I told you I'm going out of my way. I have made a commitment. Do not ask me why, but I'm going to play Final Fantasy XIII. Do not ask me why. I'm going to do it. I know that it's the worst thing that's ever been made. I don't care. I have decided I'm going to play it. I don't know. Dennis, I don't know. Okay?
I can tell you it's not the worst thing.
Right, but the way you say that, it kind of is.
It's not great, but...
I don't care. Something happened, and I'm doing...
What platform are you in?
PS3.
Okay.
PS3, and I'm doing it before this fall.
God, you said that on radio. And, you know, we've had a lot more listeners normally than we do, and we do this regularly now. They can hold that over your head.
I am absolutely going to do it, and I don't understand why I'm going to do it. But what I'm trying to express to you is, in this particular time, this very unique era that we're in, mm-hmm. and it will not last for long, I feel that this is my time to shut my yap and finally play a lot of the games that I have let fall to the wayside, because I've been such an avid... This is the part where I make my excuses. I have spent so much time playing multiplayer games. So much of my life has been when I come home and I sit down in front of my PC again. I'll just play some WoW, or I'll play some Eve, or I'll play whatever flavor of the month MMO I happen to be taking a look at right now, or I'll play some Battlefield, or I'll play some Day of Defeat, or I'll play something else. You know, it's very easy and very comfortable to slip out of your skin and just become, you know, a mindless loot collecting robot or a mindless bag of reflexes that does nothing but go online and shoot people. Like, that can be very soothing very, very good for you at a certain thing, rather than sitting down in front of a puzzle after spending all day solving puzzles, essentially, right, in your job. So that actually leads I'll play that again next weekend, or you know, maybe I'll play it next month, or you know, you wind up pushing it back further and further and further, and you have this whole bag of stuff that is truly brilliant, and you can't commiserate with your fellows about it because you haven't played it, and you know, and then Nabokov gets sad because I won't just start Dark Souls. So these are very real things to me. I mean to not repeat my useless statements of the past. I mean to finish things.
Right.
And for whatever reason, I have decided that the launch of the new consoles is my finish line.
Yeah, I was going to say that you're taking flack in the chat room, but you're actually not. Final Fantasy 13 is taking a lot of flack in the chat room.
Man, 12 was worse, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, boy. Expect to... you can't reply. Well, are you signed in? Are you able to sign on that thing?
Here.
I wish you could, so you could reply. Anyway, we've got to take a break. We're going to come back with the second hour of in-game chat. We'll be right back. You know this one?
Yeah.
Welcome back to In-Game Chat. Okay, you know this one. Go for it.
That's Braid.
That is Braid.
Yeah.
That is Braid.
I think that is one of the loveliest little pieces of music I've ever heard. It was not made for the game, I don't think, was it? It was actually a licensed piece of music for something else. But I love that music.
Yeah.
I would just not play the game for long stretches of time while that piece of music played.
There's people in the chat room got it. Braid? Sounds like Braid. It's Braid. Congratulations. Welcome back to the show, and we're going to jump into some listener mail now. Daniel Phelps writes to us earlier in the month. We have kind of a backlog of email that we're getting to, and this is a perfect time to go through your backlog of email as well. He wrote to us earlier this month looking for a fun online shooter. He's done Team Fortress 2, Battlefield. He even did Unreal Tournament 99. His taste leaned to that of James, as does his class selection, basic soldier guy or medic. Ace of Spades almost had him, except that the Steam version uses peer-to-peer rather than dedicated servers. And that being his only real problem with the game. It's a pretty big one since he can hardly find anybody to play with. So, he wants to know if we have any suggestions for an online shoot man's game or hopes for one in the near future.
He already mentioned Battlefield, and I was a bit late to the party on this current Battlefield. So I'm still there doing that. And I'm enjoying it, and I feel like, obviously, it's sort of deflated a little bit. The interest isn't really there. There's only a few places I can go to play and actually feel all right. I suppose, you know, like feel like I'm actually on a decent server full of people who might be interested in achieving whatever goals or the point of whatever we're doing. If I, outside of that, beyond that game, if I wanted to shoot a guy with a gun online, I would play PlanetSide. I know that PlanetSide is supposed to be about combined arms. It's supposed to be about, land and air and sea and infantry and armor and domination by aircraft and all of this sort of complicated various unit type of activity. Whatever. No, it isn't. People just log on and they go shoot everybody else. That's what I do. I'm not helpful for anybody. I just find a place where there's a bunch of guys, and I go and I shoot those guys.
He talks about the hope for one in the near future. I saw one at E3. We actually heard about it about a year ago. Kickstarter funded, but really good-looking game, takedown. Very old Rainbow Six-ish. Very, tactical shooter.
Man.
You know, one shot, you're dead.
That would be fun. Rogue Spear is still one of my favorite shooter experiences.
And that's coming out this fall. So that's something to look for as well. But
I know, obviously, for me, the one in the future is Battlefront 3. That's the shooter I'm looking
for.
You
don't even know anything about it.
I know it's coming out.
You know what? You're a horrible person. You don't know anything. You just recommended a shooter. This is the thing that matters the most because it's got a name. Is basically what you just did. We don't really know who's making it. We don't really know what the idea behind it is. I mean, I get that Battlefront's sort of a notion you could use to and distill from that notion some concept of a game. It is literally a fiction in your mind right now. Stop it. I want it to be a thing I want too, but I don't know if it's a thing I want yet. That's not... Whatever, Matt. I'm not used to this already.
Nab says to go try out Ghost Recon Online as well, so that's a good suggestion.
He really likes that. I tried it once, and I was not good at it, so it's a bad game. That's actually not true. I did fairly well. I didn't really grok it properly, so I was sort of flailing around and being stupid.
I'm
actually really good at shooting people online.
I was in the same boat you were, that I was dying a lot in Ghost Recon Online, but I was still like, you know what, I'm going to come back to this later and put some time into it, because I did kind of enjoy it. I just really wasn't familiar with everything that was going on.
Yeah, I'm actually going to do something that I wasn't going to do, and I actually am going to say I still like CSGO. I still like Counter-Strike GO. I think it is clean and vast and lightweight, and, you know, its head is nowhere. It's really nothing to me, and sometimes I need that. I still don't think it gets any better than Day of Defeat. That's as good as it's been for me.
He had mentioned Day of Defeat in his email. He had played Day of Defeat and Battlefield and that sort of thing. He had kind of gone through that. Day of Defeat is always good to go back to, but there you go, Daniel. I got lots of suggestions for you. So pick one and let us know which one works for you, which one you like. Mitch the Accountant writes to us again after having just listened to episode 18 of this season. That is the episode right before E3, the one where Microsoft revealed their policies for Xbox One, and said that time is a bit crucial for this email because it was sent after the Microsoft press conference, but before Sony's. So it was sent on that day, June 10th, but it was after MS's press conference before Sony, so we didn't know about a price. He focuses on the Xbox One, saying that the subtext for Microsoft seems to be their asking price is somewhat brazen, without much of an explanation of how things are going to be easier, more efficient, and more fun, benefits to the customer. Everything heard so far sounds harder, less efficient, and less fun. And again, time crucial on this because they've reversed their stance, but for a lot of people it's a little too little too late type thing, and they're still leaning in Sony's camp. The price also hurts them tremendously, so there is that. But I can understand exactly where he's coming from, and I doubt he's changed much of that tune since the reversal in the policies.
Because we still don't know what they're about.
No.
I don't actually want to see somebody reverse their policies amidst sort of a big backlash or roiling disagreement about their designs. I don't like that. I don't really trust that either, because I don't feel like theirs was a very gracious reversal. I don't think they were happy about it, and they don't seem like a happy group of people. And it tells me, you know, if you're looking at the subtext, right, they're not happy doing what they're doing. They still really wish the thing they originally sold me on or tried to is the thing they'd love to be selling me right now. They wanted that thing to break pre-order records. They wanted that thing to mop the floor with Sony. That's what they wanted.
Yeah.
They are unhappy where they are. I suppose going back to the first hour that I can then understand why people would always expect them to reverse policy or go back to their original policy. I sort of questioned why anybody would believe they did that, but not really suspect that Sony would do the same thing. But I suppose in fairness, it's kind of hard to trust somebody like Microsoft right now, no matter what they do. Even if they turned over a new leaf and were completely genuine and honest, it would be difficult to be comfortable with what they said.
Well, we talked about this. You know, once you make that change, you set a precedent.
Now, what won't you change?
Right.
Now, if you will just change the Kinect, your price, all the TV stuff.
You already changed one of your big features.
Yeah.
Not the rest.
Yeah, just change everything, right? Just go ahead and do that. Then
I'll
buy it.
Or they changed one of their features. Why not change it back? Which is what we talked about earlier.
Yeah, it's the question mark over everything.
And that is, yeah. I can't really put that in Microsoft's camp alone to say that Sony couldn't do the same thing. Next email comes from Nabokov. He writes in with his post E3 thoughts as well. He wrote this after all was said and done, the press conferences on June 10th. He's got a lengthy write-up over it over on his blog on Destructoid, but the critical part that he points out to us is that he feels certain things need to be free for everyone for good reasons. He shouldn't have to pop in a disc and have it tell him to go buy gold or another console to play local online with his stepbrother. He hopes console gamers realize that the only difference between the PC and their next console is a USB cord and a controller driver, both of which they already have. So, I sort of agree with this, but the thing is, not everybody is on to the whole PC gaming thing. Not everybody gets that. People want their games to come from their consoles. I want to say the majority of consumers, and I could be wrong on this. I have no source or no numbers or no facts. I just know what I see when I go into a retail store. And it just seems like the majority of people are there to, are your console gamers, and they have no idea that the PC holds this vast world of great things.
A lot of folk around here, at least, you know, people I've talked to, the PC is a work box. That's what it's there for. It's there for your word process and your spreadsheets and everything. There's my game box over there. That's where my games live.
And never the two shall meet.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand that, and I'm sure he's talking in the chat room right now about it. But next email comes from...
Hey, hold on a second.
I'm sorry.
I had a whole thought in my head.
Well, then speak it.
I was providing opportunities for other people. However...
Don't do that.
He and I talked about this for minutes, and I realized that a while back, and I realized we weren't going to come to any particular agreement. The only reason I am willing to let the paywall for multiplayer in particular go by is because we don't know for certain what honest services are being provided at the moment. Maybe we're still, in certain positions, we're still going to be relying on peer-to-peer. For free-to-play stuff, we're obviously going to be relying on different pay structures and different income structures for those companies. But I'm at least willing at the moment to believe that, particularly in Sony's case, putting some amount, the majority of multiplayer behind a paywall is to offset some of the other better things they are doing. Mostly this is in a... I'm trying not to let the concepts of what's right get in the way of what has to be done. That's a ridiculous statement. But money does need to be made. And Sony has made very clear concessions in other places regarding their system. Microsoft's policies don't appear to be changing much, at least not at the moment. So
right, yeah.
It kind of is what it always has been. And they did say that.
We're going to have to say that with everything now, aren't we?
Well...
At least not at the moment. This is the way it is currently. Because, you know, I remember,
Because they've specifically said, this is just going to be the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
We remember what it was before, and that's another thing that Mark Whitten had said. However you feel about gold right now, just imagine that's what it is going forward.
Yeah.
I don't want to actually have to cover the details. But back to the point, for the time being, I am willing to accept a multiplayer paywall from Sony, and will give them the benefit of the doubt that that is going... that money, that revenue stream is designed to allow them to do some of the other better things they appear to be doing, and to hopefully offset the costs or pay outright for some of the things they're going to be using to support the multiplayer. I don't know, or the online services and stuff. At the moment, I'm willing to be okay with that. I will also tell you this, and I like to remind people about what kind of person I am. Personally, as the gamer, not as the critic or the kind of guy who tries to see things from everybody's point of view, personally, I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to pay that $60 a year anyway for PS Plus. It has already proven its value to me.
50.
If it's bought yearly, right.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Right,
I was just trying to be kind and put it at whatever
at
it is.
At the same level for
whatever the amount is, as long as it's not ridiculous, I'm going to pay that. Just like I don't care about the DRM. I'm actually astonished by the number of people for whom that was the big issue with Microsoft's console. I mean, I don't care. My stuff's plugged in all the time. I don't buy used games. I don't trade games in. I don't loan games to my friends. I don't do sleepovers or whatever. I don't personally care. I don't, this is my personal thing. And I'm not super rare in this regard, which means that a lot of the genuine and honest and fair outrage, it just doesn't amount to much because there are so many of us that are good consumers and bad consumers at the same time. And we just don't care. Because I'm going to do it anyway. So how much can I really disagree with it as a guy who buys and plays video games? I don't know. So I think that particular conversation's not over yet.
Mm-hmm.
I may be on the wrong side of history here. We'll see. It may turn out that Sony is just looking for a money grab. And that they're not actually using the paywall to pay for anything. But Anyway.
No, I understand. I understand. Matt Wilson chimes in quickly about E3. The console winner for him was the PS4. His most impressive game was Titanfall. His most unique game was Project Spark. The impressive tech was the Oculus Rift. And his winner of E3 was the PC because of the Rift. And that almost every game will see a PC release. Did you happen to see that list? I think it was PC Gamer or somebody had done... where they went through all the announced titles at E3, and we're going over, will these have a PC release? Will
I they, think I they? Did see that list.
Just
yes.
A long list of pretty much everything.
Again, no good reason anymore. No physical, real-world reason. There are plenty of business reasons, but no honest reason why not. All of the hardware, every point on the hardware triangle now between those two consoles and the PC, is it something in the neighborhood of parity? We've broken down a lot of the walls, a lot of the engineering walls, because it's now much simpler. We're not talking about PowerPC, cell architecture, and x86 architecture. We're talking about x86, x86, and x86. The basic architecture of these systems is now closer than it's ever been before. So why not? In the past, we always said, why not? Mm-hmm. Because... well, the PC is another place for you to make money. And the argument was, it's not as simple as you think it is. You do have to port over, and it is its own set of work, and you're all just going to steal it anyway, so why should I bother? Now, if that port process, if that multi-platform process is as easy as it looks like it's going to be, then it almost seems like piracy or no, they really are leaving money on the table if they don't make a PC version. So I would hope so.
Yeah.
I will also probably go out of my way to play some multi-platform titles on the console anyway.
Hey, we talked about what Watch Dogs looking to be one
I
of those.
I think at the moment, yeah, I think that's where I'm going to play Watch Dogs.
Yeah. Titanfall, I'm going PC, but
yeah.
Know, Watch yeah. Dogs, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Likely because there's going to be a lot more people on PC to play it with that I want to play it with. You know, my group of friends probably won't be having... I say my group of friends, you guys are in here. how many of you picking up an Xbox One at launch?
No.
Nope. And I'll be there when you pick yours up.
So that's the situation with that, is that if it releases and everybody's over on the PC that I want to play with, that's where I'm going. And that's an interesting thing to say, because it hasn't really been true for this past generation. It's been, are you guys playing it on the 360? Are you guys playing it on the PS3? One or the other. Now I can say, are you guys playing that on the PC? Or are you going to go console with it? And we're going PC, so let's go there. So, next email comes from Ravenlock. He writes in to be that Nintendo guy. He wanted to correct us and say that Super Mario 3D World isn't just a Wii U version of the 3DS Super Mario 3D Land. It has 4-player simultaneous co-op with Mario, Luigi, Toadstool, and Peach, all of them retaining their special abilities from the old NES Super Mario Bros. 2 game, plus new power-ups. So yes, it's a Mario game, but it's a full brand new game from the Mario Galaxy team, which is key for him since it was one of the really great titles on the Wii. He's excited to play their newest work, although it seems to mean that he'll have to buy a Wii U to do that since he doesn't actually have a Wii U yet. But he just wanted to correct us on that issue, which is fine, because I remember we talked about this and we thought, yeah, kind of like a port type thing, but it's actually not a port. They're just keeping the naming convention.
That's I like that they're going with the Mario 2, you know, the characters and their abilities. I've always enjoyed Mario 2, even though it was the unusual one in the original classic.
I was
going to
say, you're weird, but yeah.
Well, because it was so unusual. I mean... you know, he started off in a dream, and it played differently enough from the other Mario games. Mario 2 has always been one that I've enjoyed.
I'm not usually like this, man, but it's all been wrong since the Super Nintendo. Everybody's just confused. Everything they've done has gotten worse since the Super Nintendo. All Zelda has gotten worse. All Mario has gotten worse.
I'm trying to argue with this, but
I mean, I am not.
The Wind Waker, I think, was the best out of the newer stuff out.
That's not what I said. I didn't say there weren't a best of all the things that were worse than Link to the Past. Clearly, there has to be a best of all the worst things. Yes. I'm just saying that I can't see it. I have tried to see it. I am not anti-Nintendo. I grew up with it. I did. I should have that same gripping nostalgia, or I should still have that same that same kind of innocent, wide-eyed, fun-loving sort of approach to video games that apparently helps people to enjoy some of what's currently happening in Nintendo's world. But I don't, and I have tried, and I've sat down in front of other people's Nintendos, and they have assured me that if I would just play this real quick, I would get it. And I don't. I feel like when I play their current games, I feel like people who don't play games at all must feel when I try to get them to play anything. It has no effect on me, and I don't understand it. And it is not what it must appear to be, that they are not hardcore, they have gone too casual, that I just don't like them as a company, and that they are ridiculous. They are all those things, but that would never, I mean, I'm pretty ridiculous, so that wouldn't keep me from enjoying them if they did something that I liked. But in this one way, I am unable to get out of high school.
The games don't have that Super feel Nintendo came of out. This, you know, Mario World.
Right, like I'm that guy who never stopped listening to, like, classic rock, because that's what was on when he was in high school, you know? For me, Nintendo is what was happening when I was in high school, and I can't get past it. The 64 had a couple things I thought was like, this is like okay if you like stuff that looks worse than the last generation, but everything that the company is about changed at that time in my life. And then all this other stuff started happening at this adult time in my life. And maybe that's it. I don't know. But I could still turn on Super Mario World and just be like, man, this is just magnificent. This is one of the finest video games I've ever played in my life. Still.
Super Metroid, same way.
Yeah. Link to the Past, the finest video game ever made. Like, that's how I feel, and I would still feel that way if you put me in front of it, because I still think it's pretty, and I still think it plays really, really well, and I still think it's got the right balance of new ideas and classic gameplay, and everything since then has just been some kind of weird thing to me. So I feel bad, because I don't ever feel like I'm giving them their due as a company or covering their games properly. That's why I wish you were here a lot more.
As he points to Dennis.
Because I don't know what I'm talking about. Somebody starts talking about... I swear somebody starts talking about current Nintendo stuff, and it sounds like I must sound when I'm talking about games around random people in the world. And I don't get that about myself, but I know it's not just me.
It isn't. Sitting over here, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I tried... Look, the GameCube only provided for me Wind Waker as a single-player experience. Everything else, I needed to have you guys over with to play Mario Kart, which is pretty much all we did after that.
Yeah.
Tried a little bit of Mario Tennis, a little bit of Mario Golf.
There were some things on the GameCube that I thought were pretty swank.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, there was the Resident Evil remake that was fun
game.
To go
well,
through.
Well, I was more thinking about... not so much. I was more thinking about Nintendo's individual properties, like their
the
versions
Metroid
of their
Prime.
Stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't like that as much as side-scrolling Metro.
I didn't like it as much either, and I said a lot of wrong things about it. I was just like, this is stupid. It's not side-scrolling. And then I played it, and I was like, man,
yeah, it's really good.
Wow. Look what you did here,
Rogue Squadron.
Oh yes.
Just to throw that to you.
Thank you.
Matt, you're welcome. But yeah, I had that too.
The Paper Mario game, just adored. I mean, it did a lot of things that were really... And Wind Waker, I thought, was just lovely. But I don't know. That's just me laying out, like... I want to... Every now and then, I feel like I need to reiterate the fact that I don't... I really don't hate Nintendo, and we certainly aren't trying to be the sorts of people who don't get it. We just don't get it. Some of us. And I actually feel bad about that. But
to me, it seems like the GameCube was the last time Nintendo was actually actively trying to compete with the other consoles.
And that may or may not be true. It doesn't really matter. They are who they are.
Yeah.
I wish they were putting out more games for their people, but anyway.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter at all.
Last email comes from Sarah. She wants to know if any of us put in time with the new DLC for Borderlands 2. Matt seems to be working his way to make that happen.
Yes.
She's excited about it, but will probably wait to play it when she has some company to play it with. And also, she would like me to say the word serendipitous. So there you go.
Hey, good job on that.
I was thinking maybe she didn't think I could, but yeah.
It's not words, it's names that he has issues with.
If serendipitous was someone's name, he would never be able to say that word.
Anyway, so that is it for the mail segment. When we come back from the break, this is your warning, we have spoiler talk abound for The Last of Us. Every single person in the room has played it, has beaten it, and we are going to talk spoilers in the next segment of In-Game Chat, and we will be right back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat, music from The Last of Us. As we go into our spoiler talk discussion of the game, we had a non-spoiler talk last week, but this time we got everybody in the room who have played and finished it, and we can talk spoilers. So, that said, where do you begin when you want to talk, when you want to have a spoiler discussion?
The first thing, here's what I'm going to do, because the only person who I don't know who thinks anything about it is RJ. Because Matt was here last week, and we were able to talk amongst ourselves. I talked to Dennis a little bit outside of the studio about it, but neither of your voices have been heard on the radio, and I don't know anything about how you feel about it. And
well, playing the game, I felt was, I mean, it was okay, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of talk about Game of the Year.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out why that is. I mean, it was a decent effort. I had a lot of fun with it, of course. I mean, it had a few issues here and there. You know, I made the mistake of putting logic in some places and had to let that go in some areas. But overall,
like, what bothered you?
Clickers, for one thing.
Yeah.
Dealing with them, like,
was it just that they were one hit kills?
That's part of it. Yeah, because one strategy I had to come up with, and I didn't like using it, but it was necessary to survive, was abandon the party. Let them deal with the clickers, because they can actually hold them for a while.
Oh, sure.
Like, Ellie, here you are, Joel, big tough Texan.
They grab you and you're done
for. You're gone.
But any other character gets an enemy on them.
Ellie's 14,
and
Ellie's 14 years old with a switchblade, and she can hold them off for a good 30, 40 seconds. You got plenty of time to reload your weapon and get back into the fight.
It is
one thing like that. Just little things like that that got me. I mean, but overall, I'll say I had a good time with it. It was a good run through, and it's to the point where I want to do it again on a higher difficulty. See what else I can do with it.
That A is not a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
B, this is one of those games where I absolutely cannot imagine playing it again. I don't want to play that game again. Everything that I think made the game worthwhile was in the revelation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the story unfolding and me being there and experiencing that, I don't think Winter would be as fun the second time around. Winter might actually be pretty crappy the second time around. I don't know. It's not just about how the story unfolded, right? It wasn't just about.
You're going back. I know where you're going. You're going to that place that Gersnort sent in about where. Guy can do all the tricks, or guy can do that one amazing trick, but he can only do it once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing wrong with that. I have defended BioShock Infinite in this exact way. I think one of the things that is very, very bad about video games is that they are an experience. As much as that's become a buzzword, that's what they are. And some of them rely more on story, some more on characters, some more on the physical gameplay or something like that. And I know, RJ, from experience, that you respond most to the physical gameplay, which is why you do want to play something that is a challenge. For me, it matters, I don't want to say least, gameplay is always like super duper important, but I am willing to forgive a lot if I have a stupid smiling look on my face while I'm doing it, if I'm feeling like a thing. And then when it's over, if I look back and examine it in the harsh light of day and I'm saying, well, turns out that this or that didn't make a whole lot of sense, does it really matter? How much should I judge it by that? How much should I judge it by, you know, that wee feeling that I had inside, that like funny fizzy feeling you have when a story in a game is unfolding? And I know that a story alone isn't enough. And I don't think that this game was story alone. But I don't know whether it's fair to look back on it. Every time we try to do it, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. When I look back on a game like this and I try to examine everything that did wrong, sometimes I feel like that minute when it's done and I step away, that's the minute that matters. That's the thing that matters most, what that whole experience was like. If we think about Bioshock Infinite that way, it was a really good game. The more you think about Bioshock Infinite, the more you're like, why was everything so wrong? Really, why was everything so mechanically stupid?
Well, at the end of that, you had 10 minutes of just story coming at you.
Right.
I mean, and you didn't have to worry about the combat being bad or anything like that, because there was none.
It really, really makes me wonder, well, in you saying that you actually didn't find it all that good, and then talking very specifically about the mechanics of the game, kind of seems to indicate that you didn't care much for what was happening in the story anyway.
No, I mean, I didn't say the game was no good. I mean, I was trying to understand why a lot of people were saying game of the year material. I mean, I didn't have a feeling that would make me, I guess I didn't have the same experience that would make me feel that way.
No, which is fair. It's entirely fair. Hmm?
It's very hard to profess game of the year right after playing it. Like,
I do think that's something that you shouldn't do.
What are the criteria for game of the year? Is it just that you have the wee feeling after you're done with it? Or is it the, can I replay it again? Or what is that? I think that's just individual right there.
Well, more specific to this game, it simply isn't anything without the story. It wasn't even really a slow burn. It started with Sarah's death in the beginning, and it ended with no one's death at the end. Well, unless you want to count Marlene.
Yeah. I was going to say, there was a bit of a death at the end, but and that has received plenty of groans from people wanting to...
I thought it was perfect.
No. For me... And for you as well.
I can't imagine it happening any other way.
For me, that's exactly... That's what Joel did. That's what he would have done.
That's where the argument sits, is that, you know...
It doesn't matter what I thought as a player.
Mm-hmm.
What sport... I'm not Joel. Joel is the dude I just happen to be controlling in this story. And that's it. He has his own thing. And that was 100% in character for Joel to do.
Yeah,
it reminds me of the Mass Effect 3 ending that we talked about. How, like, the entirety of this series, Commander Shepard's doing this one path, and then you're given this option to do something different. Like, no, why? He's been doing it this entire way. Why would you deviate from that? The same with Joel. That the entirety of this the game, it was protecting Ellie and making sure that she's alive to get to the next thing, whatever. But he was looking after her.
In fairness, I think if the circumstances of the story had been a little bit different, you could make an argument for Joel having done something different. But I felt that in the story being what it is, I really, really thought that it was perfectly fine for him to do that. And I really, I don't know what Naughty Dog wanted me to feel. I know they have a certain opinion about it, and that they'll probably never tell me what it was that I was intended to feel, and that's fair. I don't really like the idea of stories and games and stuff that are so completely obvious about, you decide what's right. Like, no, man, tell me the story, right? Tell me what you had in your mind. I don't mind bleak and horrible things happening, and... I suppose where this game is concerned, the thing that I thought was most consistent and most perfect is that it didn't seem to relate itself to 2013. It didn't seem to wonder what a person in my comfort zone would be thinking. And I never thought that that was actually what was happening. I thought consistently that, they're doing a really good job of showing me a bunch of people at the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a year into the zombie apocalypse, you can wonder about people and their interactions based on old world criteria, right? Fine, you got The Walking Dead for that. That's perfectly fine. These people have been living at the end of the world for 20 years. I don't know that there is anything human left. Which is why I suppose I think it's such a really great human story. It sort of peels away all of those layers of things that we assume are a natural part of us, right?
It gets rid of those mores that we have as society.
Right. Things that you think are just, that come with the package. They're part of the deal on delivery. Every baby born understands implicitly right and wrong and how people should interact with each other and what is best for individual and when that has to be sacrificed for group. And I think that those are things that are bolted on. Those are things that are invented and crafted and imagined and agreed upon. And so we all attach them to ourselves and we use them to form a working society, because without them you can't have that. But when working society is torn away from you,
what do you have left?
What good are they?
Yeah.
Are they any good? Are they really a part of what makes us who we are? And I really liked that it was kept as simple as it was at the very end. Look, you find out what you need to survive. That's it. Survival's all you've got. You find what you need, and you keep that thing.
If anything, this game to me seemed like the morals that we have are a hindrance in this world. That, you know, when you're on the way to Pittsburgh and the guy stumbles out and Ellie's like, oh my gosh, he's hurt, we should stop. And Joel's like, no, we're not stopping. Right. He's not hurt. And at least not yet until I run him over. Then right. He'll be hurt, you know. So if
he more important is that he knew what that guy was doing because yes. He had done that before.
Yes.
Yeah, he mentioned specifically, I've been on both sides of that.
Yeah.
Right
yeah.
After that.
And you've killed innocent people?
Eh.
It's like, I'll take that as a yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you had, where we're coming from in 2013, you know, yeah, I'd stop and help. Oh my God, there's someone, hurt. But that would be
we're coming in 2013. No, I wouldn't. Yeah, I would dial a number on my phone and be like, there's a guy right here. I don't know what he's got, but I don't want it. So could you come help this guy?
But it does seem like what we would do in a situation or take into it would be a hindrance in this world.
Right. It seems that to me. I'm sure all of the people who stopped to wonder, what's the right thing to do here, had their faces torn open by a clicker, or more likely they were shot by a marauder or whatever we're calling the really, really bad guys. I don't really know, and I don't, it's very hard to, it's really, really hard to imagine what a bunch of people are going to do at the end of the world, never having been to the end of the world. But I liked that it had me, I was convinced that I was living at the end of the world for the entire duration of that game. I don't ever really feel like they let up. I was convinced that at any time either one of them could die. I don't think they will, but if they did, yeah.
I honestly, with everything that I had heard going into this and all the tweets from people who had played it early and even the people who were playing it before I had gotten to it, just saying like, oh gosh, this game, Tears, this game. I really started to suspect. I was like, well, then The Last of Us must mean, I understand that The Last of Us is a broad generalization of we are the last of us as a people or whatever the case. But I started to take it a little bit more, The Last of Us being one of them was going to be the last of each other.
Right.
Thinking that someone is going to die at the end of this game. I just don't know which one it's going to be. And that's why all these emotions are coming in. Just like you make an animal the focal point of your game, that dog's going to die or
I'll
whatever the animal's going to be.
I'll feel bad about an animal. I don't particularly feel bad about the people.
Every time I saw Last Guardian, I was like, I'm really going to miss that griffin thing.
Falcor.
Whatever it is.
It's been 5 years now waiting to learn that thing's just going to die at the end. But I...
Which it didn't turn out to be the case.
Speaking like more directly to how the game was built, I think that I never felt like they were necessarily going for the emotional moment. I thought that they were always being fairly honest.
And they just let the emotional moments happen.
Yeah, now that we can say openly, I do think that Summer was wrong. I think that Summer was built all wrong. The first section of the game was too long.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that the segment with Bill should have been cut by a third. The entire segment where you go to the school in search of the battery,
it's pointless.
It was a stupid fetch quest that didn't end in anything. It wound up with them going somewhere else. I think that the story should have been tightened up. He should have known that his former partner had the battery all along. I think that maybe his partner grabbing the battery could have been one of the reasons that they split up and couldn't work with each other, or the source of an argument. I don't really know. I just feel like I was being dragged through an awful lot of gameplay to no end. And by the time I got to the end of Summer, I thought, this thing overstayed its welcome, and I really feel like it could have moved along more briskly.
Yeah, because I remember talking to you when I was playing through Summer. I was like, is this ever going to end? Because I know there's like 4 seasons total.
Yeah.
And I was just like, did I like miss a tool back here? Because this has been going on forever.
Yeah, it was really dragging. I also thought that the segment with the guy and his brother, I understand why that was where it was. I understand why we ended that where we did. It was the big shock moment of him shooting his brother and then shooting himself. I'm fine with that. I just think that the entire section, I think Scott said it very well when we were talking to one another about it. That was one segment that reminded me I was in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
That last portion of Summer where you're assaulting that house through the neighborhood and then having to play a turret segment as a sniper.
Mm-hmm.
All should have gone away. Because it made it too long. And B, it was like, yes, here's the turret segment. I don't know why this is here in a game that is otherwise
not like this.
Aggressively telling a story and moving the plot along. This is really, really, really putting the brakes on. And I didn't exactly understand it. And I didn't like being reminded that I was in a thing, that I was sitting in a turret, that I was playing a video game. And the other segments seemed to be doing such a good job of letting me live in the moment. That one I didn't like. And in all fairness to the game, I thought that stopped right there. Because I thought that Fall moved along very quickly and very well. And I don't know where anybody else was, but I was like, all right. Joel's dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Starting at the beginning of Winter, I was like, I don't know that he's dead, but if he's dead, okay.
I like how they held that off for a good while.
I'll believe it.
You know, when she took the rabbit back to the horse, yeah. I thought we'd see him on the back of the horse or something like that, where she's you know, sustained him and kept him going and that
he
sort of thing.
He wouldn't be on the back of a horse. The seasons had obviously changed. He was either dead.
Yeah.
Or hiding
or something, but either way, he wasn't there. And they don't let...
I distinctly remember thinking she's on her own now.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
Well, when you take over controlling her, it's like, okay, that we're doing this then, you know? So he's dead now. We gotta finish whatever this is. And of course, the hunting part, and I thought, I'm not sure what this is. I know there's more of this game, because you've obviously said that Winter was one of the best pieces of gaming that, you know, you've ever played. And I thought, well, it surely isn't just hunting to survive that he's saying this.
Yeah, that's the exact same thought I heard when I listened to him talk about that before I got to Winter. I was like, it can't just be the hunting sequence.
No.
I mean, that was great, but
it was doing exactly what it needed to do.
Yeah.
It was leaving you on the hook. They put you on the hook at the very end of the previous season.
Where if this was episodic, it would be just ghastly.
Man, I would love it. I would have loved watching all of us deal with that. But they left you on the hook perfectly. Their timing and the tension and that strain was so perfect. Right up to the moment when she asked for antibiotics. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
And they let you off the hook. He's not in great shape, but he's not gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they architected that whole thing, that whole build-up. About the only interruption was the weird hold-the-line fish-in-a-barrel sequence in the sawmill, which I think should have just been cut. I think it was unnecessary. I don't think I need that to understand the danger of being alone with clickers, particularly since their only way to deal with it was to make Ellie overpowered for that sequence.
I was going to say, it did reveal the fact that, you know, one shot, one kill when you're using Ellie.
But other than that, and again, I just don't think that was necessary to that degree, at least, I don't know. It didn't really matter. It's fine. You get past it quick enough. But I thought that the nature of how they chose to tell that segment of the story, it stood very much apart from everything else they did. but I can't remember someone tightening the screws so slowly and so perfectly over the course of several hours. And that back and forth between the two of them, each with their own perspective, is something I actually like very much in video gaming. I think it's a really, really good way to keep things fresh and to deliver different perspectives on a particular piece of story. And I thought it was magnificent. I thought it ended perfectly, and it wasn't even triumphant. It still felt bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It felt good for her to bury the hatchet in David's head, but it felt bad because she was broken. Just enough of something had happened, and it was the first time you saw a crack in her demeanor.
Yeah, because the very next spring, she's just kind of aloof. Just sort of like, I'm not really into this anymore.
She's kind of distant and detached in the way that a lot of victims of violent crimes are, or, you know, assaults.
Let me ask you something about that sequence in the restaurant with David in the end. Did anyone find out the most nerve? That was, for me, that was the most nerve-wracking part of the game, because all that time,
the boss fight thing in the restaurant.
You had to stick him three times. Before you got to control Joel again. But suddenly, your listening aspect is now not as effective, nowhere near as effective as it used to be. Because David's doing the same thing you are. He's
after the second
quiet
stab,
and
he's
listening for you,
being really quiet.
Yeah, and then the second, then I started to realize, oh, that's the point of these broken plates on the floor. And I don't have a mechanic to get around them except navigate this maze properly. That part was the most nerve-wracking for me.
In addition to being an excellent chapter of a game, it was an unusually tense but not frustrating boss fight.
No, I mean,
It was a wonderful take on a boss fight.
Yeah, you just have to pay attention. Look around slowly.
Yep, and you have to be careful, sneak up on him, because he'll look around. If he sees you in his peripheral, he will be on him.
Come after you.
Yeah.
The doctors, Naveed brought this up in the chat room, saying that he agreed with our decision, or with our consensus, that Joel as a character would do what he did to Marlene. He had more trouble with the surgeons.
I had no trouble whatsoever. The surgeons and everybody else, as soon as I opened that door, I didn't give them a chance to do anything. I just shot all three of them.
I was saying,
as soon as you pulled the scalpel, shot in the head, that was it.
I didn't even know he pulled a scalpel. I opened the door, guns a-blazing, because I was going to get her out no matter what.
I feel like I handled that sequence perfectly. Perfectly in character, perfectly right. I popped into the room, the dude whips out his knife, and it's like, you're not going any further. And like, in a quarter second, I drilled one right through his eye. The other two doctors stepped back, and I ignored them.
Yeah, my hand says otherwise.
I thought, I didn't feel like Joel was on, he was not out for vengeance. He made a decision at that point when he knew, and he was told by Marlene that Ellie would die, that nothing that he could do could stop it. There was no other option. Whatever happens, whatever we want to happen, she's dead, and so are you if you don't leave. Joel was always a broken man. He knew that. He has lived 20 years at the end of the world in a nightmare zombie apocalypse, and every second of those 20 years, his daughter is dead. And I don't have children, but I've spoken enough with people who do to understand what kind of broken that is.
Yeah.
It's a kind of broken that never gets fixed, and you don't ever get over it. You just simply stay alive another day.
Yeah, what's I say? The worst pain you'll ever feel is outliving your children.
So the concept that Joel was somehow just like a grumpy but lovable dude who traded all of this in for some selfish action in the end is absurd to me. The man was broken every minute of every day from the time his daughter was killed. This displayed his brokenness quite perfectly. He knew he was. It was one of the reasons that he wouldn't allow himself to be with Ellie. But
yeah. Well, that is going to do it for us. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in the chat room, as well as everyone listening on the stream and on the radios as well. Thanks to everybody who grabs us every week from iTunes or however you get our show for later use. Really appreciate it. Don't forget to join us on Twitter, Facebook, and our forums at colonyofgamers.com. And if you're on Steam, we've got a Steam group you can join up with over there and play games with us and other listeners. Plus, we give out free games from time to time. Plus, check out our Minecraft server at play.ingamechat.net Thanks, everybody. We will see you next Saturday, and we leave you with music from Dead Space.